I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps.
In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino.
Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly.
Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Hello and welcome to Brokenomics. Now, lovely viewers that you are, and you leave comments below and all that sort of thing, and every so often I read the comments, and yeah, some of you are great, some of you hate me, which I find an absurd concept, not liking me, but some of you don't, and some of you ask questions, and one of the questions that comes up a lot is about pensions, and I'd love to tell you all about pensions. The problem is I don't know anything about them because I've never had one. I never put a single penny in a pension in my life because I don't trust them. But nevertheless, I am behooved to respond to the audience and address your pension questions. So I thought, well, who do I know who can talk about that? And that's when I found Charlie Rogers. Charlie.
Hello.
You are a Brokenomics viewer, so we know you're a sensible chap.
I am.
But you've also spent many, many years in the pensions world, I understand.
Yeah, that's right.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, in which case, you are the man to answer our questions. So,
perfect.
What's your sort of journey through the pensions world? What have you been doing in that?
Cool. So, before I jumped into pensions, I wanted to be a roller coaster designer. So I went to Swansea. Went to Swansea University to do a civil engineering degree.
I mean, there is a video game for that.
Well, yeah, yes. And it's a lot more fun, funny enough, than the degree I attempted. But yeah, coming out of civil engineering, I was looking for work. My old man's a financial advisor,
right.
So he thought, come and do some maths for me. So I ended up being a what's known as a paraplanner.
Do you need maths for roller coaster design?
To do
you
all
can
the
wing it, can't you?
Well, to do all the structural calculations and the force stuff.
Health and safety nonsense.
Well, it was the health and safety nonsense that turned me off, and I was just like, environmental science. No, I don't need to do this.
Right. But you turned your maths powers to something good, did you? Well.
Well, it was a lot drier, even yes. than the soil mechanics modules that I had to do. So got started in financial services, working for a financial advice company. Pensions were our speciality,
yeah.
Doing DB transfers and stuff like that.
It was, okay.
Sort of the high level stuff. Obviously working with family is quite tough. So eventually left working for my father and I joined the dark side and worked for some providers for a little while. Most recently a big yellow one that I'm sure a lot of people will recognize if they...
Not one of the big names.
One of the big names.
Well, they do a lot of business.
They do a lot of business.
Yes.
And I was part of the business-to-business sales side. So right. in the financial advisor to corporation, mm-hmm. I was the glue that held that relationship together for a long time.
Okay, so let's start with the basics. What's the general pitch of having a pension? Because I've never been sold on it myself, but why would one want to have a pension?
So the purpose of a pension and... We can talk sort of general level at this point, sort of not separating out the different types of pension. Mm. The point of a pension is it is a replacement for your income once you've retired.
Yes.
So you're no longer working. You don't have anyone else giving you money in some way. Pension is there so that you can actually afford to put the lights on. You can put food in your fridge, feed the cat, whatever. Some people are lucky enough to achieve a level of financial success where they've got assets around them that can generate an income. Perhaps they have been a successful businessman and they've got a company that they can sell, and that'll just put a big, a large amount of money in their bank account, and then they can just draw that down over time. Yeah. Perhaps they've bought assets like property and they're letting them out as landlords. Or perhaps they can, over time, sell those properties and again generate those lumps of cash. For most people, that's not really the case. You are more likely to need some sort of savings vehicle to either just take money from or to leave until you need that money at another point. Pensions are taxed in an interesting way, in that you don't pay tax on the money that's going into a pension. In fact, you get tax relief at the income level. While it's growing in the growth stage of the pension, that's also tax-free. So any stock market investments you make are free from things like CGT, IHT, stamp duty. All of that, it's disregarded. If it's pension wrapped, tax-free.
So you can move from one asset to another without triggering a taxable event?
That's right. Okay. As long as it's within pension assets.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is a narrowly defined list.
It is.
Maybe we come back to that then.
Yeah.
Yes.
Then at the other end, you pay general income tax as you take the money out.
So this is the thing that bothered me about it, because I thought to myself, well, I'm quite good at making investments and they're likely to go up. Mm-hmm. So would I rather pay the tax on the income now and put it in, and then if I can, let's say I can 10x the value of the portfolio, I would rather pay tax now rather than 10x that tax in the future when taxes are probably going to be higher anyway. Mm. So that was one of the key things that stopped me from putting into it. But it is quite efficient for people who are earning a lot, don't really understand investments, and just want to shovel as much money in. And this is a sort of, because I had a sort of similar start in my financial career. I started in financial advice as well.
Yeah.
And what you often see happening is people who are earning a lot towards the end of their career, so their 50s and early 60s, just shoveling as much money as they possibly can in, getting huge tax relief, and mm-hmm. then maybe just a couple of years later, then starting to pull that back out again. And it makes a lot more sense for those sort of people, I thought.
Yes, it does work that way, in that tax relief is typically done at your marginal rate. So most people are basic rate taxpayers. This means that if you put £10 into a pension, you get 20% tax relief. And the maths is funny on this, because the way it sounds is you think 20% on £10, well, that's an extra £2. It's not. It's £2.50. Because the 20% is the value of the total amount that's going in.
Yeah, oh, right, yes.
So if you think you're making 80% of the contribution and the tax man is giving you your income tax back.
Right.
So that makes the 100%.
Yes, and that was the thing. And because, I mean, I was in financial advice in the early 2000s, and that was at the stage where a reasonably high-earning individual could expect to be paying higher rate tax while they were working. Mm. And as soon as they retired, they then dropped down to basic rate, which meant you could put money in and get the 40% relief, which, as you've just explained, is more than £4 on £10. It would be like £5 on £10.
Yeah, yeah.
And then immediately start paying tax at the lower rate. So for them, it did make a lot of sense.
That's right. Yeah. And to clarify, what we're talking about at this particular point is private pensions or personal pensions.
Yes.
So this.
So let's ask you something funny.
So so here's the divider. It's the private pension
what
and the state pension.
Instead of doing a private pension, you just relied on the state pension.
Okay. So here's my big bugaboo. This is why we originally got talking.
Yes.
So the state pension. The state pension originated from, it started out in the early 1900s in Britain as a way of looking after the very old and very poor. It was originally a means-tested benefit to give to the very old, and in them days, 70 was very old. 70 was about the sort of life expectancy of a normal person.
Well, my understanding is in the early days is that old people were much better behaved back then because they could be relied upon to die within a few years of taking their pension. So it didn't really cost the government that much money to offer a pension.
That's right. So it was a couple of shillings a week. It was only available to men, and they had to be at least 70. You had to have lived in the UK for, I think it was 20 years. You had to, and there was a behavioural element to it.
Was it?
Yeah. So unfortunately, what we're seeing with some of these rioters, some of the older people getting arrested, back in the day, they'd have had their state pension taken off them, which is a worrying concept if Starmer wants to go back down that rule and
impose
that.
Well, he doesn't want to, whether he can get away with it, but yeah, he wants to.
When we come on to talk about the funding of the state pension and what they could do, it's, maybe that's
And how much is the state pension?
So right now, it's £221 and I think 70p a week.
Right.
And here's where everything goes crazy, because we've got to think about things in a weekly basis.
Yeah.
So,
but about £900 a month, roughly, something like that.
Yeah, it works out to be just over £11,000 a year.
Okay. Well, you better have, at a minimum, paid off your mortgage by then.
Yep.
Because maybe you could just about scrape by, but that's...
It's not a lot.
Yeah.
And it's realistically, it's never been a lot. The interesting thing that Cameron and Osborne did about a decade ago was they introduced sort of a ratcheting effect to the state pension, something called the triple lock. Mm. The triple lock is the state pension will always increase by the rate of CPI, the average earnings in the country, and 3%. And it'll be the higher one of these.
Yes.
Not the minimum, the higher one.
And presumably, it's been CPI throughout most of that period.
Yeah. Because CPI has been running at, 8-9% for...
Right. A while.
Well, the official figures, isn't it? So,
yes.
So what we saw was when they introduced that, state pension was £121 a week.
Right.
They immediately bumped it up to about £146 a week.
Okay.
And since then, it's climbed to £222.
Is this reviewed annually, is it?
Yeah, it's reviewed annually.
Okay, so it's gone up quite a bit in the last couple of years, hasn't
it? Yeah, definitely. And because of the nature of compound interest, it's got the potential to keep skyrocketing sort of keep going up.
But if you live in a modest home and you paid your mortgage,
mm-hmm.
and you've got a car and you're not looking to replace it and you're not looking to go on holiday, if there's a couple of you, and you said it works out about 12,000 a year, was it? Something like that?
About £11,000 a year.
11,000.
So per person.
So if you're a couple, you can see somebody scraping by on 22 grand as a couple, but it's
a meagre existence.
Right. And thus, private pensions, which is basically what you did.
Yes. Right. Yeah, that's the ballpark where I've been playing for the past 10 years. It makes a lot of sense, both from a planning perspective. Thinking that, the point of a pension is not to spend it now, but to force yourself to leave it until you really need it, which is why pensions, they are different to things like ISAs, where ISAs, you may have sort of a term with your ISA provider where you can't access the money for maybe a year. Pensions, you are not allowed to access private pensions. At the moment, the year is you've got to be 58 years or older. And from then, you can sort of do with your money from what you like. Different to ISAs, of course, because ISAs, you can usually sort of dip in and out. I think what you were talking about earlier about sort of making lots of gains in your sort of investments and being able to take that money earlier. ISAs work the opposite way around to pensions, in that you don't get any tax relief on the way in, but you also don't get taxed on the way out.
Yes.
So, but the inside, the growth part is also tax free.
Yeah. So if you can grow your ISA to £1 million, then you can take income from it, and it will be tax free, which is a wonderful thing.
Of course.
But you've got the problem of you need to be much savvier on your selection of investments. And most people are not.
Sure.
If you're going to go for the default options, you're probably better off going down the pension route. And the other thing with the ISA, of course, is you've always got that temptation that you can access it.
Exactly.
And for some people, that's just going to be too much. It's like, oh, okay, I'm going to take it out, I'm going to do this, and then I'll put it back and you never do, and stuff like that.
So one of the other big caveats, if you're looking to plough a load of money into an investment vehicle like this, is the limits on it as well. At the moment, the limit for an ISA, the most amount you can put in any 1 year is £20,000. Mm. With pensions, they've just upped the limit to £60,000 a year.
Right.
Controversially, they've...
I mean, you need to be earning a lot before that's a problem for you.
Sure, yeah. And when you consider things like the tax relief that you're getting on your contributions as well, somebody who's earning a reasonable amount... 60,000 is a good amount to put into your pension. Mm. It's the specific limit is 100% of your earned income or 60,000, whichever is lower.
Well, you need
as
to
well,
have
so.
Taxable earnings. You can't use up your taxable earnings. So you can't, for example, put loads of money into a pension and do, say, a VCT as well, because the tax relief cannot exceed the amount of tax that you would have paid. Otherwise, not allowed.
That's right. And VCTs are, of course, you're sort of more the expert in that. It's not something that I've sold, although I have written a couple of suitability reports about VCTs. So it's, I think...
They're actually quite good. I should do a Brokenomics on them, actually.
You should.
They are actually quite good.
Yeah. And yeah. EIS and SEIS schemes.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good things that our high-earning viewers will be able to access, but a little bit weird and wonderful.
And surprisingly, the amount of high-income people that I speak to and they complain about tax, and I said, well, you could just do this and this and this and this and you don't pay any tax. And none of them seem to know anything about it. So, yeah.
Well, the point of the taxation system is to be as convoluted and crazy as possible with so many spikes on it that people go, oh, God, I don't even want to touch that. I'll just pay my taxes.
Yeah. So, what's your sense on uptake of this? I mean, presumably most people have a pension.
The uptake on it is a lot higher now that we've had something called auto-enrolment.
Okay.
So in the 90s, we had a drive by the government to get people to start buying into private pensions. Because in the UK, we've had private pensions for decades and decades. It's been a thing for a while. And that was done through... usually it's done through your workplace. There were things like the executive pension scheme that were for... company executives. They were sort of just workplace, usually final salary schemes. That's something that some of our viewers might know about.
Oh, that's a good one, isn't it? So this is, if I got this right, this is a thing, and you still sometimes get them in the public sector.
Yep.
Where basically the last year of your earnings, or the best of your last 3 years of earnings, they just pay you a salary based on that. And I think it can be up to something like 45% of whatever your last year was.
It will depend on the scheme.
Yes.
But normally what they will do with a final salary scheme is they'll take your peak year. And then for every year that you've contributed to the scheme, you will get a 60th paid of it. So they will normally do it. The maximum contribution term will normally be 40 years. So you'll have 40/60ths of that final salary, so 2/3.
Right.
If you were earning £60,000 a year, they'll pay you a salary of £40,000 a year.
Which is not bad. I mean, you don't have to go to work anymore. You're still getting 2/3.
And there's no investment risk for it.
Yes.
And you get a big lump sum tax-free at the start of it, which is why that they're going out of fashion because they're incredibly
expensive. And everybody used to
expensive.
Do this back in the sort of 50s and 60s. And then at some point in the sort of, 70s and definitely by the 80s, private companies were looking at this and doing a bit of maths and thinking, oh, my God, this is going to ruin us. And I mean, I remember when I started the investment, I looked at British Airways and I quickly came to the conclusion that this wasn't a business. This was a pension fund that has a sideline in doing flights.
Yep. Well, it's Avios is the new one with British Airways. It's the I'm not sure if you've seen the video where somebody there's a guy quite a clever chap who's explaining how the airline industry are basically forming their own currency now. So everything they're doing, they're acting like banks. The fact that they do flight is a side on. It's like banks selling mortgages.
Yeah, and any sufficiently complex system just becomes financialized eventually.
Yeah. So my credit card, my main credit card is with BA. So I'm all hang, you know.
Right.
I like Avios. It's good.
So private companies used to do this final salary thing.
Yes. Yeah.
Worked out it wasn't viable. Some government schemes still offer them, although even those are graduating away today.
It's a product of our healthcare, and you know, I'm going to touch wood with this, our healthcare system getting better over time, people living longer. I know
that's a disputable claim, but
in terms of life expectancy, in terms of people expecting to live longer,
the buggers just aren't dying anymore.
Yeah, well. Yeah. Also, the kind of places that would offer these sorts of schemes are typically white-collar work. So it's the office workers who are not likely to go out and sort of fall off a ladder or whatever. They're the ones who are going to live into their hundreds because they've had not a sedentary lifestyle.
If you've got a leaky uranium mine, you might not mind offering a final salary scheme.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
But if people have been working in air conditioning for 40 years, the last thing you want to do is pay them an open-ended thing on their final salary.
My wife is a lecturer at a university.
Yes.
And it's been very interesting sitting in on the meetings that they've been given to explain the lack of funding in the university final salary scheme. Right. It's not a final salary scheme with the university. It's something similar, but it's basically it's a similar concept.
So some of the universities, they still have final salary.
Or, yeah, all the universities in the UK.
Oh, really? Oh, right.
Yeah. There's an element of it's called defined benefit. So the way the university scheme runs is they take your earnings of that year and they add that up. Oh. So it works out quite well once you hit tenure and you're a professor and you're earning nearly six figures, or six figures in some people's case. But then that's offset by all the early years where they just got their PhDs and they're earning, you know, sort of average salaries.
So my understanding is the top of the tier, there's the final salary scheme.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's the defined benefit, which is the softer version of final salary.
They're kind of the same, yeah.
Yeah, which you only ever get... Well, actually, that's the thing that you still get in government and universities.
Yep.
And then there's defined contribution,
correct,
which everybody else has access to, which is the only bit that is known, is how much you put in.
Yep.
And then it has to grow... Okay, so tell us about the growing bit. So let's just say I'm paying into my pension,
mm-hmm.
and there's now money in my pension,
yep.
but I'm not going to retire for another 30 years. What happens to the money?
So that money in the defined contribution aspect is basically like a savings account. It's like an ISA, it's like a bond. It's invested in however way you want, and it just sits there.
Who does the investing?
It'll be the company who has sold you the pension.
Right.
So you can either privately contract a company in as a customer by sort of ringing them up and saying, hello, I'd like to open a SIP, please. So that's usually the way...
Self-invested personal pension.
That's right. Self-invested personal pension.
And the self-invested bit means that you can... Well, literally invest it yourself. So you have a range of options and you just pick one and you say, I like that and that and that.
Yeah. So the way I won't get into like the technical details of it, but effectively the way the legislation wraps the investment, it means that you are subject to a certain set of rules about how you access it, when you access it, what it's taxed at, how you get tax-free money out of it, and what happens when you die, which is an important thing as well.
Yes, that's a bit annoying, isn't it? If you spend 40 years saving up in your pension, then you die.
So the good thing about pensions is pensions don't form part of your estate. Yeah. So if you were to die at age 70, like our chap from 1910 who's just got state pension, in the modern era, if you die before you hit age 75, your pension assets are outside of your estate and they can be passed down to your dependent tax-free.
100%. And how are they? So let's say, hang on, you say if you die before 65, did you say?
75.
75. Yeah. So let's say two 70-year-olds are married.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Bobbins, he dies.
Yep.
And he's got this nice big personal pension.
Yep.
Does his wife just get showered with the money, or does she, or does it get added to her pension, or what?
So it will, as long as the deed of nomination that he has filled in with the pension provider says, hey, when I die, give my pension to my wife, Mrs. Bobbins.
Yes.
It will go over to her. It becomes her. She gets ownership of it and it gets ring fenced in a tax free environment. She is then free to draw that money down tax free until.
Until she dies. Even before she's. Okay, so let's make it to 40 year olds.
Yep.
And she gets the money. Can she just go on a shopping trip then?
Yep.
Or she can.
That's called a dependence drawdown. And that can be accessed by any by the person that it's allowed to.
This is dangerous information to put out there, I think.
Well, this is why the government doesn't want people to know about it. This is a really good way of estate planning. So,
to get bumped off by your wife after.
Well, there's that. But what I was seeing a lot of when I was administering pension plans is you'd see grandparents willing it to the grandchildren. So it, as a form of inheritance, I'm going to spend my money that I've saved. But then if I die, give it to the grandkids and then they can pay for university. They can use it as a.
Because we've got to come on to talk about annuities, because that is different to what happens if you die after an annuity. But
yes. Yeah.
Are you saying that let's say you've got somebody in their mid-70s.
Yep.
And they want to pass money on to their children, avoiding IHT.
Yep.
And maybe they've already got a private pension, they're drawing it down. Could they start a new private pension and put loads of money into it and will it to their children and then just never have any intention of drawing it down? And then when they die, that money gets passed over?
So this is where the limit based on your earned income stops that. So if you've got someone age 73, are they earning 60 grand a year?
Yeah,
probably
okay.
not. If they are still earning 60, then yeah, but no problem.
But the
age 75 is the important one, because the minute they turn 75, it becomes taxable.
I see. But let's say you're a high earning doctor or whatever in your 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to think about passing money on to your kids. And let's say you're earning 180 grand a year. You could keep 60 to live on. You could put 60 in a pension for yourself. And you could put 60 in another pension, will it to your kids. And then if you don't make it to 75, and you might have a good reason to think you're not going to make it to 75 or something. You might know something.
Well, you might be going to Dignitas at 74. So.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know if parents are that helpful, but you can basically skip IHT for everything you put in.
Yeah.
I never knew that. That's useful.
This is a big draw for pensions.
Yes.
Especially now that one of the only good things the Conservatives actually did in power is they recently took off the lifetime allowance as well. So one of the duffs that Gordon Brown did was they introduced a total limit on the amount that you can put into pensions. And by that, I mean total amount that you could put into pensions before you then have a tax charge.
Including the growth of the assets themselves?
Yes, yeah.
Oh, right. Well, that's
so there was an annual limit, the annual allowance of, it was 40,000 for a while. I forget what it was when it first started. But then there was also there was a lifetime allowance of £1 million. So on the one hand, the government is saying, hey, well done. You've planned for your retirement. You're going to make sure that you're not a burden on anyone else. But don't plan too hard. Don't save too much, because then we're going to tax you on it.
No, you don't think they'll do that advice?
It was Labour governments, you know. But the Conservatives took 14 years to get rid of it. so, okay. You know, can't give them too much. Give them too much credit. We're in a weird limbo at the moment because Labour, before the election, were talking about reversing that and putting it back in. So we'll see what happens.
Mm.
But when it was taken out, the financial services sector jumped for joy, because the calculations were a nightmare to deal with it. It made everything harder. And it was a disincentive to save for your retirement. It was just a bad idea. So we'll see what happens. But at the moment, touch wood, there's no
also £1 million in 2002, whatever, when Gordon Brown was
it's very different
very different to £1 million today.
And it did go up. It went up first to 1.5 million and then they adjusted it down, and then it was going up and sort of followed CPI for a little bit. Yeah, you got to feel sorry for those financial advisors in the couple of years where it really got crazy. And there was a split year in 15-16 where you had two different limits that you had to calculate. Tax is insane in the UK.
So you put your money into this thing.
Yeah.
With the points we raised. And then you can either invest it yourself if you find a SIP provider, self-invested mm-hmm. pension provider, or you can, what I think most people do, is they just go to one of the big names mm-hmm. and they say, why don't you put it in the big name managed fund?
So that's if you're going out of your way to be like, right, I've got a bunch of money kicking about in my bank account. I need to do something with it.
Yes.
What most working people do is they are, by default, rolled into their company workplace pension. So right. This is called auto-enrollment. And this was what Australia did first when they realized that not enough people were saving into private pensions and there was a big state pension burden.
Yes.
So they turned off this, they made plans to turn off their state pension. But first what they did was they said, right, if you have a company, you have to provide a pension system and your employees have to be default enrolled in.
So you can opt out?
You can opt out.
Right.
Generally, it's a bad idea because the way it works is the government mandates that the company has to put money in on your behalf as well as you. And the way it's done through payroll, usually it's more tax efficient for the employee to do it as a salary sacrifice.
Yes.
So you save on the national insurance contributions, yes. You save a bit of tax.
Because if you're earning 50 grand and you put 10 grand in your pension, you're taxed as if you were earning 40 grand, which is probably in a lower tax bracket.
Not anymore, because 50 is...
Oh, okay. Is well, the, whatever the math...
Let's say 70,000.
Yes.
Well, let's say 55,000.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. So you'd have... if you were to just put it in from your bank account, you'd have 5,000 that was eligible for 40% tax relief.
Yes.
5,000 that was eligible.
So that was what I was offered to do that, and I still didn't take it personally because... That would have meant I would have had to have picked from the list of their investments, which were managed funds. And I just know I can manage money better than they can.
Yeah.
So I was willing to give up all the tax advantages and the extra 5% or whatever it was to manage it myself because I knew that would be more. But I take your point, for most people, take the 5%, take the whatever percent it is that your employer offers mm-hmm. you, take the tax advantages, take the salary sacrifice to move yourself into a lower tax band and, you know...
And just build whoever. Something. Yes. There's nothing stopping you from doing a transfer out of that pot into your own SIP.
Yes, yes, that's true.
So that is something that you could do. You could take, I don't know, 5 years of something moderately cautious so that you are just building up a small growing bit. And then once you've got, I don't know, 30,000 saved, open a SIP with it and manage that yourself more aggressively.
Yes.
But stay employed and then just every 5 years, move a lump over. And that's a clever way
of the big names, you know, the Avivas and the LNGs and whoever else, you know, mm-hmm. they are big names in fund management because they're managing large pots of money.
Large corporate pension schemes, usually.
Yes.
So they
they're like our UK mini BlackRocks, really. I mean, they're just managing all this money.
Yeah, kind of.
Very cautious and normal about it. Boring returns.
Yeah, I mean, there's obviously two sections of the business then. So there's the... The people who administrate the pension schemes, they will sort of do the day-to-day admin of like making sure, oh, Mrs. Miggins has just put £20 into her thing. Let's give her £5 government tax relief to top it up. There we go, that's filed away. And then you've got the other half, which is the asset management side, which is, okay, here's Mrs. Miggins's £15,000 that she saved so far and she's moderately cautious, so let's put it in 60% equities and 25% corporate bonds. And,
yeah, disastrous idea that. But
yeah, okay. Well, yes. that's a very different conversation than yes. what we're doing today. But yeah, so that's how it'll go. So
you've got all these different types of pensions, and we covered mm-hmm. that. When you get to the end of it, you've stopped working, what happens then?
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino. Coda just made riding the bus easier than ever. Now you can pay your Coda fare by tapping your smartphone, smartwatch, or card, just like you do at the coffee shop or grocery store. Love paying with smart card? Keep doing that. Have a pass? Still works perfectly. Want to tap your phone? Now you can do that too. It's just one more way to move your way with Coda. Get moving now with Tap to Pay. Learn more at coda.com/tap.
There's still time to get holiday ready. Right Rug Flooring makes it easy with next day installation and 24-month special financing with approved credit. Carpet, hardwood, luxury vinyl, and tile. We have everything you need to make your home shine for family and friends this season. Schedule a free in-home estimate or find a showroom near you. Visit rightrug.com, RiteRug.com. Be holiday ready with Right Rug Flooring. Right.